You know what, Joe? I've been thinking a lot lately.
What?
Well, this podcast...
You know what happens when you think?
Oh, I get sad.
You get sad?
Yeah. Well, this was thinking to get me not
you
sad.
You know what happens when you don't think?
I get sad.
You get horny.
Okay.
That's it. You're in one of two modes. You're either thinking and sad or unthinking and rock hard.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's probably about right. And... we've been doing this podcast for maybe 3 years now, haven't we?
Have we? I don't know. I don't even care.
Yeah. Well, it's very much like a... it's almost like a diary, right? It's a kind of conversation about movies you forgot. But underneath that, invariably, like, I'll tell a story about what's going on in my life. You'll tell a story. Some sort of throwaway stuff. And so I can go back and listen.
Some of it's also very meaningful as opposed to throwaway. But I agree with you. A lot of it is... very disposable.
Right, but very meaningful stuff. But so I can go back and listen, and I do, I have done. I'm shameful in that I do listen to myself and you, because you're there too. But I can listen to an episode that we did in 2020.
One of the 2020s.
Yeah. One of the 2020s. It's 2026 now, so 2 years ago. And I can listen to a past version of myself and hear him tell stories and reflect on and go, oh God, I can't believe... oh yeah, that was going on then. Oh, I can't even remember that story. Or what a silly reaction I had.
Can I tell you the only story I remember that you've ever told on this podcast?
Jeez, only one.
Only one has stuck with me.
Yeah.
When you got in the lift with your family and
that man
was a bit rude to you and you had a conversation with that rude man in the lift. That's a classic moment. That's a classic movies you forgot moment. It was actually quite a big moment in your life. It was one of those things where...
where it wasn't a big moment in my life.
Yeah. And you'll get your chance to talk in a second.
Sorry.
You kind of say it in like a throwaway story. You're just like, oh, this funny little thing happened to me, you know. But actually, it had a really big impact on you. I remember you talking about it quite a lot for months after that, thinking about that man and where, you know, what about him, where he lived. You went to therapy because of that situation and... you almost got a divorce because of that story. And yet it was this little throwaway thing you talked about on the podcast. But actually there was this deeper, darker side to it as well.
Mm.
Where you nearly left the family because of that story. And you built like these two little boxes that would help you go back in time to try and like get back in the lift and then say different things to him.
Stop me
every time.
Yeah, stop me from going back into the box.
It was really confusing. But what were you going to say?
No, until you mentioned the lift, I hadn't thought about that story in a long time, but that's what the podcasts are. It's a form of time travel in a way.
Oh, I see. That's a lovely theme.
Well, also, because we haven't really talked about where we are in our lives in a while. Like, we have just gone straight into, like, boring anecdotes and or talking about the episode.
What are you doing?
I just wanted to check in with you and sort of see where you are and how you're doing. And like, we're just like starting off a baseline. I want baseline Joe 2026 March.
You know. Is this a joke or do you actually want that?
It's not a joke. I mean, obviously I then want to give you baseline Adam Richmondo. March 2026. And obviously, this episode, this is not for casual fans. This is for hardcore fans anyway.
No one's listening to this. Yeah, good Lord.
Who wants to hear about Primer can skip ahead 10, 15 minutes. But this, I want to kind of, there's so much lovely lore and emotion. I don't think I've checked in with you.
Look, no shit. I'll give you the lowdown on my year.
Yeah.
Okay. In a very brief, I'm a professional marketeer, essentially, you know.
Yeah.
Some people call me a journalist. Some people call me a content factory. Some people think I'm a host, presenter.
A content.
All I am.
A content factory,
A content factory.
Content.
All I am is a man. So here's what's happened to me, okay, in 2026. I've had a slight change of role at work, which has actually resulted in an enormous change in my perspective in life. And it had a very positive effect on me. I did stand-up comedy for the first time the other day. I'm doing it again this week. I'm excited about it as well. I feel very hopeful for the first time in a long time. I'm actually quite happy which isn't something I would have ever said for the last sort of much in the last kind of 30 years or so. You and I have written a play. Actually, we wrote it a few years ago.
3 years ago.
3 years ago, that we re-unearthed in January, and that we're determined to stage at some point this year. And I'm 35 years old. My dad died at 52. I think, right, I've got to fucking smash these next 17 years now. And I'm excited to throw myself at the world. No, not holding anything back in a way that I wouldn't say. I wouldn't look back on myself critically over the last sort of 17 years as an adult and think you didn't do enough. I think those 17 years as an adult was all about getting me to this point now where I'm ready to say, hello, world. My name's Joe Devine, and I'm here to do something mildly embarrassing in front of you and not really mind that much. You know, that's it. And the podcast has been part of that as well, I would say. It's been very nice to have an outlet for, as you say, little personal diarist references, stuff over time. Now I would like to expand my avenues for that across greater climes.
How often do you listen to older episodes to like dip in? And
sometimes I do. I wish... There's often a conversation in the Discord where someone will say, oh, which episode was this specific story in or this anecdote in? And we can never remember. Sometimes they're very good at crowdsourcing that.
There's a horse story that someone really wants to get. It's a great story.
I was talking to my friend Paul the other day, and I said to him, he listens to the show sometimes, and I said to him, oh, I once told this story about my dad dying and telling him a story that he told, and he said, what, the barn's on fire? He said, I remember where I was when I heard the barn's on fire story. He was out in Birmingham somewhere. That's a really good one. I'd like to listen back to that, but not that often. I don't know. What about you? And what's your 2026 so far? Q1, baby.
Yeah, it's okay. I feel like I feel like I've done a lot of stuff, more stuff than I ever would have imagined.
What, like sexual stuff?
Or... No, like I've done some stand-up.
Oh, right.
Something I never would have thought I would have had the balls, to call them balls, you know,
right.
To do, which is that's a good thing. But then on the other side, I also feel like I'm fraying a bit at the edges about really realizing how thin-skinned I am, and it's been quite uneasy. I've been quite uneasy about various things, and I feel like both excited by getting stuff done, but I'm 10 years older than you,
uh-huh.
And I still feel like there's a constant void. There's a constant looking around for someone to pat me on the back and say, you're doing great, son. You're doing great.
Son being the operative, of course.
Yeah. I'm really excited actually about a new bit I've got about my dad and how little he contacts me. I'm so excited to do that. So, and me being a dad and having a family is making it harder to do stand up. But all the funniest stuff I keep thinking of, it's all stuff that's kind of related back to that, and
right,
you know. So it's good, you know. The stuff that's good shouldn't be easy, and I keep trying to say that to myself. Stuff that's good shouldn't be easy.
That's true. You want to make a delicious Victoria sponge, you got to put the fucking work in, man. You can't just get the stuff off the BBC Good Food website and think that it's okay for you to, you know, never have done it before, spend 30 minutes in one afternoon on a April weekend making a Victoria sponge and not expect it to be subpar at best, right? You want that light, fluffy love? You got to put the fucking work in, man. You got to pound the ground. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to beat those eggs. I find it so difficult to look at other cakes.
Yeah.
Cakes in particular, and you think,
oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
person... It makes such an amazing cake, and look at them, they're making that amazing cake.
Yeah.
They've been making cakes for 10 years.
Yeah.
I want to make the cake they're making right now. And I've made a cake.
Not when I'm 55.
I've made, yeah, and it's, but at the same time, I should be thinking, no, I don't want to make their cake. I just want to get in the process of making cakes. Just make a cake a day.
It's the process.
It's the process of cake.
It's not that it's. There's no destination to this stuff. It's the only destination there is death.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host, and Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello, welcome to the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast, the show in which me, Adam Richmondo, and my pal, Mr. Joe Devine, chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And on today's episode,
wait, you normally say hi to me.
Oh, here he is. Hello? Who's here?
I was going to take the opportunity to do a little alternative intro of my own. Would you mind? Just one quick one.
Okay.
I was going to say hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. The podcast where, because we've already talked for such a long time, the episode is longer than the film.
My phone won't log into Letterboxd, so I'm just going to have to bring up my Letterboxd on my...
I'm primed and ready on IMDb if you'd
No. Shush. Letterboxd. We have gremlins in the control room. Letterboxd is down due to an unscheduled technical outage. We'll be back soon. We have gremlins in the control... Grow up, Letterboxd. Grow up. Just say your fucking website's broken. On today's episode...
Old IMDb is here. I'll read it for you. Don't worry.
No, you're right. Worry. Do you know what?
No, it's fine. I'll read it for you.
The lot. Do it. Do it.
Here we go. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Primer. 2004. Hour 17. 12A. That's the UK certificate. Four friends / fledgling entrepreneurs, knowing that there's something bigger and more innovative than the different error checking devices they've built, wrestle over their new invention. That is the blurb here. And
dear.
That is as dense and unreadable as the film is. How about
but,
that?
Well, who directed it and who wrote it? And
it was directed and written by the same person, Shane Carruth. I'm going to call him Carruth.
Carruth.
Who also stars in the film as Aaron, the sort of, I guess he's kind of the lead, opposite or alongside David Sullivan and a couple of other people. I think it's fair to say, apart from Shane Carruth, who went on to do Upstream Colour and then seemingly not a lot else, and David Sullivan, who went on to star in a couple of TV things, but again, not a lot else. There's not really famous people in this. There aren't people who went on, you know, it's unusual in the sense that usually an indie movie like this that, it, you know, accrued such acclaim would usually also be the claim to fame for indie movie makers who would go on to much greater things. And in the case of Shane Carruth, that just hasn't happened, neither with many of the actors or any of the actors in the film.
Yeah, you say that. I mean, that's what happened to the Blair Witch lot as well. And that was an even bigger film. None of those actors got to go on and do
what about the filmmaker
else,
though?
Likewise.
Really?
Yeah, I think they went on. Yeah, likewise.
I like the idea of there being a comedy sketch in that where everyone assumes because the Blair Witch Project was so innovative that the filmmaker must be a genius. But then for the next film, they were like, right, we've got £1 million. What do you want to make next? And they're like, oh, I just want to have a shaky camera in the woods. That's my favourite thing to do. You know? Or it was a complete accident that the woods was, the camera was shaking. They were in the woods because they couldn't afford to film in a house, you know, that sort of stuff. It was all by accident. Yeah, we can workshop it a bit, but I think there's something funny in there.
Yeah. No, I think I love that. That's a really good sketch. I think what we should do first, the fun thing to do with Primer, is like that IMDb blurb isn't going to cut it. This movie is about two guys who accidentally discover time travel.
Yeah.
Of a sort. And this is the key to Primer and why it's such a fascinating movie. Time travel of a sort. It's time travel with a cost.
With strict rules, yeah.
It's strict rules. It kind of reminds me of during... If you go back and listen to the Jumper episode, I asked Joe, how would you make Jumper better?
You give it the Primer treatment, yeah.
You came up with seemingly independently like the notion of every time a jumper jumped across time that they would age. Say if you jump from the UK to Australia, you would age... You might jump immediately, but you would age the amount of time it took you to get to Australia.
Or that amount, you wouldn't necessarily age, but that amount of time would have passed by the time you arrived, right?
What? Yeah, whatever it was. It was a great idea.
Sure.
So do you understand what happens in Primer?
Yeah, I think so, broadly. Do you want me to explain?
I get it. Oh, I know what happens.
Right, okay. Do you want me to explain to the audience? Should we both do an explanation and then we can decide whose is better?
Some people find it very confusing.
I think it's deliberately confusing. I think it's, to be honest, I think it's unnecessarily confusing. And I think that is... So, one common criticism that intelligent people have of films, which is sometimes fair and is sometimes, a means of not saying the thing we all know to be true, which is that studios aren't wrong for making mainstream movies that cost a lot of money more accessible in order that broad audiences can all have, or, in a sort of utilitarian sense, as many people as possible going to see the film can have a broadly positive experience of watching it and understanding it. Primer is kind of the opposite of those. You know, we sometimes criticize those films for, like, making something so obvious. It's a favorite critique of yours, particularly of films that I like. You love to say, like, oh, and it was spoon-fed to me by the director. The writing is like, you know, you think, like, I've got it 20 minutes ago, and then the director goes, and that's why that happened. And you go, oh, God, film. You know, Primer is the total inverse of that, where not only does it not do that, I think it actually, possibly deliberately, or also possibly unintentionally, because it was a first film for these people, makes it more complicated than it needs to be. Because the storyline really isn't that complicated. The storyline is no more complicated than Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Okay, it has almost all of the same plot. Not exactly the story beat for beat, but it has many of the same time travel rules. Harry Potter lacks the cost of time travel, and there's a lot of holes there. But in terms of, like, overlapping timelines, it's all pretty standard. Primer makes it itself difficult to understand by leaving out what I think for many audiences would be crucial scenes to help them follow which characters, which versions or timelines of characters they're watching at any given point. So the film starts out in this very ordinary and followable way, where we learn through one of the characters handily explaining to the other throughout the big chunks of the film. It's just one character explaining to the other character what's happening in the film and how it works. We go into these boxes, we turn them on at this particular time, we get out of there because that's when our time traveling backwards selves are coming out. And then at the time where we want to go back in later, we go in and we get in the box and we wait there for ages and blah, 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 blah. The boxes only, or the time loop only works for as long as the box has been turned on for. So it's not like you can get in and then go back 1,000 years or something, unless you turned it on and waited 1,000 years, in which case, in theory, you could do that. But you also have to be able to survive inside the box with limited food, limited oxygen, or whatever for as long as it takes to go back. So there are these very kind of strict limitations on it. About 60% of the way through the film reveals to us that one of the characters has a fail-safe, what he calls a fail-safe box, which is an additional time-traveling box that's set up in a different place that's been on for a long time, so that if he wants to, he has the capacity to get in it and go back to before he told his friend about it and, in theory, undo everything that had happened. But little does he know, his friend has already been using something similar to go back and change things without telling him. And at this point, the film starts to overlap all of these different timelines. It introduces some random social event party where a guy comes in with a gun, and one of these guys is like trying to repeating this and replaying this over and over again to kind of perfect his social experience and make himself look the best, whatever. The film becomes virtually unfollowable, or at least, like, you have to make some big jumps and interpret things in the way that you see fit as a viewer. So I think I enjoyed it as an experience. I can definitely understand why people watching it wouldn't really follow what's going on. You texted me halfway through saying, like, I can't believe the film doesn't have your undivided attention. I think that's key. Like, you very much need that in order to follow what's actually happening. Handily, you were texting me to distract me during my watching of the film. But no, I think it's broadly speaking, it's very successful. And I think of this film, the only sort of black mark against this being a forget you forgot is that I think of this fairly regularly whenever people say, oh, the film explained itself too much. I think about Primer, a film that, you know, arguably doesn't explain itself enough, or maybe explains itself the perfect amount if it knows the exact audience that it wants.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think the sort of time travelness of it all is the sci-fi level. But like, as you love talking about, like, what is this film about? What this film is really about is about selves and different selves and battling with an earlier version with yourself and having two versions of yourself knocking about, or possibly even three or more. Yeah, it's why I loved it so much. But then I didn't need to go back to watch that to get that hit. I can watch The Prestige. You know, I can watch. What else does that?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's mainly The Prestige. Later, I've got a little game for you that relates to time travel movies. So don't overthink that.
So, but also, like, yeah,
I mean, that's it. Like, just to interrupt you, that's in the text as well, right? At one point, these two characters are talking to each other, and you know, they again very handily to explore the kind of ethical universe of this idea. They have slightly different perspectives. One of them is saying to the other, but how could you not go back and change something knowing that you could? Like, knowing that you can do this completely changes the whole perspective on, you know, social cringing about something that happened or not making the right decision, you know, that you made. Given that you have the possibility to change it, doesn't that change the whole dynamic of the thought?
Yeah, I mean, it's full of these lovely little ideas. Like, halfway through the movie, Aaron says, I'd fucking love to just punch this guy in the face. And because the dialogue is a lot of like muttery mathematical chat, you're like, who's he talking about? Oh, I don't even know. But he said something, he wants to hit someone in the face. And then there's some lovely voiceover. And then the other mate's like, well, we could do that, right? Because this today, we got to do it today because I got woken up at 4 a.m. because a kid set some car alarms off. And there's this really intricate reason as to why, if you go and punch him today, we can be in the machine and then we can go back and then I won't do a thing. So then I won't wake up and I won't come around here and do the thing. And you're like, ooh, that's such a cool notion in the movie. And you're like, oh, this is, I love that. And then
well, that's the moment where their kind of tight logic, their control over their routine starts to break down as well. And it's this like completely nothing thing. I like that as a moment because it's not like he's saying, oh, I want to go back and change this really important sort of, you know, split fork in the road in my life. It's that he's saying something as silly as I want to go back and punch a guy in the face and then have never done it.
Exactly. And so that's what's so compelling about the movie generally. I think it cost, and you know, everyone knows this, as you said. You say everyone knows this. I know this. People who know movies know it. It costs $7,000 to make.
Uh-huh.
And so it's one of the great indie movies ever made, like on a budget. Robert Rodriguez made El Mariachi for sort of a similar amount of money. Kevin Smith makes Clerks for, I don't know, $20,000 on his credit card.
And presumably like a lot of that would have gone just towards the gear to make it, but also I'm thinking there's a scene where they go into like a quite a sciencey looking place to do some sciencey looking things, and I wonder, oh, maybe that was a big chunk of the budget was just like hiring out this spot, you know?
No, there's a lot of thank yous. I think he would have got a lot of favors, but like there's also a lot of it. I think they had a very noisy. It's shot on film, and I think they had a very noisy camera, so I think there's a lot of ADR. And the sort of the sound coming out afterwards, but so a lot of the why isn't there a scene like that to explain it? You know, a lot of it's probably filmmaking compromise, and it's just if you're going to make a movie and this is all you've got and this is all you can shoot, it's up there as like it's great, an amazing calling card,
yeah,
for the kind of storytelling you can do for fuck all money.
Totally. Well, I mean, yeah, and even less money now. If it was shot on film, then I assume almost all of the money went to the film, right?
That's what I wanted to ask you, actually, because it's another reason why I think, because the world has changed, and how, I mean, even before AI, but particularly because of AI and how it, instantly and immediately you can kind of create film, like very impressive visuals, but even before that, like how cheap it got to, you could film a film on your iPhone,
cheapy peepees,
and Sean Baker did with Tangerine. But back then, you had to make a movie with a film with a film camera.
Well, you didn't have to, but you wanted to.
You wanted to, so it looked good.
You could have made it with a digital camera.
Yeah, it would have looked shit. But anyway, so like this, it used to be like the effort and the craft that would go into something like this, a film like this,
yeah,
would give the whole thing like an extra boost in a way. Like you look at Clerks, you look at this, you look at Blair Witch, you're like, look at what they did with such little money and all this heart. And at the time, it blows people away. I don't think that exists anymore.
I think it does. It's just that the context for it is very, very different. The context for it is social media, right?
Is it? What's the context? Why is the context social media?
Because in this instance, right, these people made a film. I don't know the story of it, so I don't know who distributed it or how they managed to get it into theatres, or I don't know. Maybe you know more than I do about
it. I think
that.
It got into Sundance, and it's the making of the movie is one thing, and then, you know, the only reason it gets released is it's in a festival, and then it gets bought by a studio.
And it gets picked up by a distributor.
It gets picked up, but like that's what happened. Clerks got, you know, picked up by Miramax, and
I think today, like, you know, the expectation for new filmmakers might be more likely. Okay, well, you know, in the same way that it is with many different entertainment industries, music, the music industry being one as well, the industry essentially says to the individual, well, prove it, get your audience, you know, post your stuff on the internet, and if people like it, then we'll have a conversation. And I don't know that much about independent filmmaking these days. I would imagine there's something similar to that. I would have thought that the impulse for aspiring filmmakers would be, okay, well, let's make a film cheaply, but post it on YouTube and try and get people to watch it. And actually, given that it's going on YouTube, maybe we should just make a short, or we should make something that sort of fits the specifications of YouTube a little bit better, or fits the audience expectations a little bit better. And I think one of the very worrying elements of that is that while YouTube can be a very kind of egalitarian democratic place, where, you know, one would hope that you could post videos, films about all sorts of different topics and into all sorts of different densities or paces, and they could find an audience. I think the reality is, like, there's probably a certain type of thing that can do very well, and a large group of ideas that probably wouldn't work as well in terms of getting people to watch them. So I would say, if you're a young group of people and you want to make a film like, you know, Primer people did back in 2003, 2002, whenever they did it, the answer is probably you make a YouTube channel and you start posting stuff and you hope that an audience find it and like it, and you hope to get an opportunity off the back of that.
Have you heard that guy Markiplier?
No.
He's some a gamer guy, I think, and he, or a YouTube whatever, but he had such a big following. He got into a particular game, Iron Blood or something, and he, because he was obviously making a lot of money on his socials, he got the rights, made this low budget.
Yes, I have heard that story. Yeah.
Yeah, and like no one wanted to release it. And then he just sort of released it himself. He managed to get it in some theatres. And then it's because he's had such a following.
There was like a social campaign to get people to go and watch it and go and see it, so that it would. It felt a little bit like the success of the what was the story behind, you know, behind Dumb Money, behind the Paul Dano film
GameStop.
You know, it had like a similar, the way in which I interacted with the story had a similar vibe to that, where it was the reason that people were going to see it. Okay, yes, they like this creator, maybe they like the idea of the film, but also they like the idea of the story that no one would pick this up. Like, the adults don't know what they're doing. Kids on the internet are going to show them once again how there's a new world here, whatever.
And like, oh, I've played a part in this story and I've somehow made this thing happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they had. I said that was like laced with scorn because I'm at fucking... Apparently the film is rubbish as well. But I wouldn't know. I haven't seen it. I couldn't say. I'm sure it's marvellous. I mean, anyone...
You couldn't say.
I say, like, it's how difficult it is to make a film. It's very difficult. So
you've made a couple of shorts, haven't you?
Written.
Have you ever attempted to share those on this podcast? You haven't, have you?
And like expose myself to people saying I don't know what I'm fucking talking about.
They're on the internet though, aren't
this
they?
Guy has the brass neck to have a pop at one battle after another, and this is what he made.
But they're online, aren't they?
No, they're not online.
They're not online.
I mean, I only directed one.
Yeah, well, I remember I was there myself. On set that day. Everybody loved me. I was zinging off and all the people. You know, even the actors were looking to me. They were saying, like, give us some direction. And I did it. Because there was an absence. There was a hole on the day. They were looking for someone to whisper sweet, you know, some things to them.
Yeah.
And I took a lot of joy in giving them the wrong direction so that you'd have to unweave that later.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I've written a couple of other shorts that got made, but that's up to the directors. They don't tend to be like put them online, like, mostly.
Right.
I mean, not just because I wrote them. People don't.
Have you got $7,000?
Have I got $7,000?
Yeah.
No.
Wow, you fucked.
It's a riddle. Speak, friend, and enter. What's the Elvish word for friend?
Melon. The script, the Primer script, is a bit. It does make me laugh a little bit.
Oh yeah,
because
what?
What
about it?
There's a couple of things. One is that, like, for the first. Well, you get the first like 3 minutes out of the way, the opening 3 minutes, which is basically like Primer does the Matrix, where, you know, you hear them over the phone and it's like Neo saying, I've got the script in front of me. Imagine this could be, tell you what, I'll read this and then I'll read something from the Matrix and you could tell me which one's which. Okay?
I love the fact you've picked my most loathed of all sci-fis to compare it to. It's because it's just got the phone. It's because it's got the phone effect on it.
Okay, so here's film number one. Okay, it goes like this. It goes, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to read this, and you're going to listen, and you're going to stay on the line. You're not going to interrupt. You're not going to speak for any reason. Now, some of this you know. I'm going to start at the top of the page. Okay, that's one of the films. Here's the other film. It goes like this. It goes, hi, it's me. I know you're out there. I know you're working as fast as you can. I thought I should call and let you know how things stand. I know you're real proud of this world that you built. The way it works. All the nice little rules and such. But I've got some bad news. I've decided to make a few changes. Okay, and then actually, well, you first off, you guess which one. guess which one's which.
Well, I know. I mean, I already know. Yeah. But also, yeah. I think got here it. We go. Let's mm-hmm. play another game. Right, here's uh-huh. the game. I'm not going to pick yet. Okay, fun. Okay, fine. Here we go. We can all put a voice on. All right, here you go. Right,
can you?
Every time I think I'm going to wake up.
Oh, Kermit's joined.
Back in the jungle when I was. Mr. Anderson, every time I think I'm going to wake up back in the jungle. When I was home after my first tour, it was worse. I'd wake up and there'd be nothing. I hardly said a word to my wife until I said yes to a divorce. When I was here, I wanted to be back there. When I was there, all I could think of was getting back into the jungle, Mr. Anderson. I've been here a week now, waiting for a mission. Getting softer. Every minute I stay in this room, I get weaker. And every minute Charlie squats in the bush, he gets stronger. Each time I look around, the walls move in a little tighter.
That's lovely. I really like that. What was that?
That could be from The Matrix as well. That's Apocalypse
that was
Now.
That was Apocalypse Now.
That's from Apocalypse Matrix.
Oh, I've got one for you. Hold on. You're in some motel room. You just wake up and you're in a motel room. That's the key. It feels like maybe it's the first time you've been there, but perhaps you've been there for a week, for 3 months. It's hard to say. I don't know. It's just an anonymous room. This guy, he's here already. Lenny! It's Leonard. Like I told you before, did you? I must have forgot. I guess I've already told you about my condition.
You've gone out voiceover and you're doing Memento.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, fine.
Now you do one and see if I can get it while you're doing Mr. Anderson.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. I am old. I am fat. I am bald. My toenails have turned strange. I am repulsive. How repulsive? I don't know, for I suffer from a condition called body dysmorphic disorder. I'm fat, but am I as fat as I think? My therapist says no, but people lie, Mr. Anderson. I believe others call me fatty behind my back, or fatso, or facetiously slim, but I also believe this is simply my own perverted form of self-aggrandizement, that no one really talks about me at all. What possible interest is in an old, bald, fat man to anyone? I am repulsive. I have never lived. I blame myself. It's a tough one. It's an Oscar winner.
I don't know what that is. Is that The Fly or something?
No, it's Adaptation.
Nicolas Cage, Adaptation.
He really comes out in a completely different tone in that. That's when we talk voiceover. I was like, that's instantly got to think of Adaptation, one of the great voiceovers of all time.
Let's see if you can guess what film this is from. Okay, it's not, strictly speaking, it's not a voiceover, but it's a kind of descriptor of something. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Anderson. You've heard all the evidence. You know all the facts. We have the accused at the scene of the crime. We have footprints, tire tracks, bullets scattered on the ground which bear his fingerprints. A broken bourbon bottle, likewise with fingerprints. Most of all, we have a beautiful young woman and her lover lying dead in each other's arms.
We've gone to the same one. Why haven't you found Red? There's a con like me, Mr. Anderson, in every prison in America, I guess. I'm the guy who can get it for you. Cigarettes,
you're
a
doing
bag
Kermit
of reefer.
Again.
If you're partial, a bottle of brandy to celebrate your kid's high school graduation. Damn near anything, Mr. Anderson.
I think you mean what you mean to do is
yes,
this.
Yes, sir.
You
I'm a regular Sears and Roebuck.
So when Andy Dufresne came to me in 1949 and asked me to smuggle Rita Hayworth into the prison for him, I told him, no problem. That's not bad. Come on, that's not bad. That's not bad.
And no, it's very good. Lovely
this
stuff.
Do you know what? We should do Shawshank Redemption. I haven't watched it for, I would say, at least 10 years. And I think because it suffers from being, quote unquote, the best film of all time, or the top of like lots of people's lists, the top of, you know, it was the top of the IMDb 200 for a really long time. I think for a specific generation of people, they would always consider this to be one of the greats. And I think it suffers from that, because when I think of it, I think, oh, that's a piece of shit, because all normal people like it so much. But actually, looking over this script now, some of it's, I mean, it could be, it's a fantastic film. It's a fantastic film. We should do it. I've forgotten it. We should do it.
But was, I think for, as a special, the fans will be livid, because it's not a forgot you forgot.
I forgot, but it's about us. It's about what we forgot.
I haven't forgot. You can't forget. There's so many memorable
moments. Yes.
Andy Dufresne. Like, you know.
He was my friend. He crawled through 18 football fields of shit and piss and cum.
Right.
To
so
build
what,
a boat in South America.
I'll do it, but...
I decided I don't want to do it.
Also, point of order, I've had quite a few... emails about asking for the Discord link. Apologies to people. Some of the Discord links on some of the episodes will be expiring ones, and even someone's left a review on Apple Podcasters to say, love the podcast, can't join the Discord for love or money.
I quite like that the Discord's impenetrable.
Oh, yeah, great. Let's make it hard.
All you got
to
do,
be,
when you copy that link, you've got to go to edit, and then change it to be a forever link.
No,
anytime
I
upload an episode, and it, either, I'll be honest with you, either I don't put one in at all because I forget and I'm lazy, or I do put one in and it's a forever one. But it's a bit tricky how they work, isn't it?
I have done that. It's just there's some older episodes.
Yeah, older episodes. Yeah. Here's the trick. If you've had that problem and you're on an older episode, then go to the most recent episode that has been released. And it will be there.
Yeah.
We resolve the problem. we just had to go forward in time in a box in order to get there. Would you like to play a game with me?
Yes.
It's not really a game. Would you like to do a feature with me called The 20 Best Time Travel Movies Ranked?
Okay.
The game is twofold. There are 20 time travel movies ranked on this list. I want you to guess what could be on here. That's the first thing. And I'll tell you where these films are in terms of the order. The second game, which we'll only be able to get to at the end, is can you guess, based on the films that are here, which notable media outlet has published this list? And it's a big one. It's not like a digital-only one. It's a big one. Okay?
Okay.
Right. So, first off, would you like to have a guess at what films might be on this list?
Well, Back to the Future.
Yep, Back to the Future, 1985. Actually, this list has paired Back to the Future 1 and 2 from 85 and 89. In at number 1, the only conceivable, they write, the only conceivable first choice, the first two Back to the Future films, the third, which is basically just a Western, far less imaginative, they say, have come to define time travel as a genre.
Pathetic. What a pathetic excuse for number one. Terminator.
Again, in at number three, they've paired Terminator, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. They've put those together. The lure of the first two Terminator movies were the killer robots running around murdering everyone, but they were very smartly built around a framework of pure time travel.
Is Primer on this list?
Primer is on this list. Primer's in at number 10.
Great.
Some see Shane Carruth's Primer as the gold standard of what a time travel film should be. It's the sort of movie that seems unnervingly realistic, from the down-at-heel engineers to the unshowy nature of time travel itself, where people in effect just get in and out of some boxes. Almost entirely unwilling to explain itself, for years Primer fans have come to rely on a series of graphs and charts to figure out what the film actually is. That's a bit of an exaggeration at the end there. But that should give you a little hint as to the kind of media outlet that would publish something like this. Anyway, not yet. Don't play that game yet.
What year was this published?
2023.
Time Crimes?
Time Crimes, not on the list.
Tenet?
Tenet is on the list. Tenet is a little quite high up the list, that is in low. It's in at number 19. The person writes, I have to be careful here because Tenet might not be a time travel movie. Certainly time passes in it and some of the people are going backwards in time in it. But I've seen this movie twice and it mainly just seems to be about people mumbling everything except for Kenneth Branagh, who gets shit to shout very loudly three times anyway. Here it is. This person seems to hate this film, but it is in at number 19 in the best 20 time travel movies of all time.
What an absolute moron. Shut up, you snide little twat.
Based on how you're feeling about reading this, again, that could be a clue as to who's published it, but no, don't guess yet.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, 1989, that's in at number 5. You're absolutely right. I won't read all of the things, but that's in there.
No, don't read that one. What else? Who else does time travel? Hot Tub Time Machine?
Hot Tub Time Machine is in it. Number 12. That's in there.
Amazing. 12. Amazing that could be higher than Tenet.
So seminal that it was name-checked in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, seminal?
Yeah. Big clue there, by the way.
Yeah, seminal.
No. Big clue there, by the way.
What, Hot Tub Time Machine?
So seminal that it was name-checked in Avengers Endgame.
Oh, great. And Avengers Endgame.
Avengers Endgame is in here. It's in at number 7.
I hate these kinds of things because there's time travel in Avengers Endgame. It's a time travel movie.
I mean, it definitely is.
I mean, there's time travel in it, but it's not.
It's a time travel movie.
I just don't think it is.
It is. It is a time travel movie.
I just don't think it is.
I mean, the whole thing is built around time travel. They even have montages of building the time travel machine.
I know, and I accept that, but also...
Moments ago you were saying you don't think it is.
No, I don't. I don't think it is.
You don't consider it to be.
No, I just don't think of it, and I just think it's...
That's different. That's different, yeah.
No, I know it's different, but like...
No, I'm just saying that's different to what you were saying. Me and the audience were hearing you say that you don't think it's one, but what you're saying is you don't think of it as one.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
No.
I fucking hate people who just misunderstand me. This is why this goes back to how thin-skinned I am.
That would be like saying, how about this?
Misunderstood. No, I get it.
It would be like saying
it.
That you don't consider a hot cross bun to be a pudding after after dinner. But, you know, you don't think of it as one. But it is one. It can feature as one.
Right, I know you're right. Yeah. I just wish that I wouldn't have to say...
But I don't think of you as being right.
Right, I don't have to. I just don't have to explain myself or say the right words.
I gave you the perfect round out there for a fantastic little exchange, and you refused it, you know.
I'm not having it. No. I will not have it.
And I won't think of you as having it either.
No, yeah, you keep saying it, but I just
but I won't think about
understood.
You as saying it.
No, you won't. I just want to be understood.
But I don't want to be thought of as wanting to be understood.
Right, yeah. There it is. Okay.
I don't know really. I'm a natural glutton for lots of things, a glutton for punishment, I suppose, being one of them. It's amazing to me that I've been doing this job for over 20 years now.
Your favourite film's in here, and you haven't got that. What's your favourite film?
Well, you think my favourite film is Memento.
Memento is not in here because it's not a time travel movie.
No.
But your actual favourite film is in here.
The Thing.
Nope.
I know, that's not a time travel movie either.
It's not your actual favourite film either.
Goodfellas, that's not a time travel movie.
No, but it's also not, as it happens, it's not your actual favourite movie.
Miller's Crossing, that's not.
Yeah. Again, you just keep saying films that aren't either time travel movies or your favourite film.
These are all my favourite movies.
Nah, apparently not. Apparently they're not.
You don't know what my favourite movie is.
I do. It's here. It's right in front of me. It came out in 2014.
2014. Oh, Arrival.
No, although that could be in here. No, it's not a time travel movie.
It sort of is,
but it's
in a way.
Actually kind of sort of is, but it's not in here. No. And I wasn't singing Max Richter.
I thought you were. It sounded like you were singing Max Richter.
This is North America, but it doesn't look much like it. Mother Nature has just about wiped the state clean. Most of the vegetation is gone, and unchecked winds sweep across the barren plains. Patches of ice lie thick on the ground, as if a heavy snow has come and gone. One of the Chinese spaceships descends through the thick clouds above and settles gently onto the plain. The hatch opens, and blank steps out. He takes a cautious look around. He is holding the fractal life in its small container. The clouds are threatening, but the weather looks calm enough right here. Blank starts to walk. Remarkably, part of Blank's old house is still standing. He stands in the middle of his kitchen. Two walls are missing and the rest is collapsed in a heap, but he can still see where he used to feed his kids breakfast. He's kept his promise, several hundred years too late.
Interstellar?
It's Interstellar, yeah.
That's not my favourite film.
Yeah, I know it is. I know it is.
It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened?
Victory! We have victory!
But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going. Because they were holding on to something.
What are we holding on to, Sam?
That there's some good in this world, Mr. Farrell. And it's worth fighting for.
We'll be right back.
Should we do the box office game?
Yeah, do you want to?
Yeah.
I mean, you've already played the first part, which is the budget part of the game. You told us already that that was $7,000, so congratulations, you were right.
Yeah, you seem to think that we couldn't play because everybody knows that. I know it.
Well, just that bit. Just that. I mean, I know that, so everybody here knows that.
But the fact that I need to, also, it's my game and I knew it, so it's a point.
It's not your game, it's my game.
Well, it's my game and I play it and I got it.
You mean you're the competitor of the game?
Part of the game is sometimes me knowing stuff.
No, the game is guessing. The game is guessing.
No, well, it's no guess. Sometimes I know. I've got a, you know.
Well, if you know, then you can't play the game. The game is about guesstimating.
Don't say that word.
And in this,
don't.
Okay, fine.
Don't.
You the know, game is you about what, guessing right? and word, estimating.
Right. You see, because guess and estimating, you know, you don't need.
Why?
Don't put it together. And what is an estimate? What is an estimate, if not a guess?
No, an estimate is an educated guess.
So just guess. You don't need guesstimate.
Right. The game is guesstimating. Of course it is. And you play it every week and you love it. Now, you knew that one. You knew that one. So that doesn't count. $7,000. Of course. Estimate. All right, fine. Let's get it. I guarantee you're not getting another fucking point because I'm sticking rigidly to the 10% rule. If you want that, okay, you can play this game two ways. You can take that point, which isn't even a real point, and you and I both know that because you actually knew and the game is about guessing or estimating, okay? Or you can not take the point and I will be very favourable as it relates to your next couple of guesses.
Ooh,
we will play in the real spirit of the game as opposed to the spirit I will play in if you insist on taking that point, which is holding you to the maths of this event.
Fine, let's play in the spirit of the game. Let's play in the spirit of the game, just like we did when we played it in Star Trek
right.
and almost came to blows.
Right. It's good job we weren't in the same room. Here we go. Opening weekend, US and Canada. Now, it's October the 10th. 2004, don't forget, as you know, the film cost $7,000. So how much does it take on its opening weekend? And let's work through here, because you said it presumably it got picked up. Was it a Sundance, you said, or it got picked up at
possibly.
A festival? Possibly. So it's not like it's friends and family screenings. Like, it is actually going in the cinema. People are actually going to see it.
It'd be in like a couple of screens in New York and LA.
Right, but it's going to make more money than it cost, isn't it?
Is it?
Because it only cost $7,000.
Yeah, but like in a weekend, it's like 10 bucks, 10 bucks to see.
Listen, all
bucks.
I'm saying is that I'm proud of you for not taking
10,
the point.
How do you get to 7,000? How many people need to see if it's 10 bucks?
For 10 bucks, I don't know, 700 people, huh? Which really could just be two screens full, okay? That's nothing, that's absolutely nothing. Now listen, I'm very proud of you for not taking that first point. And I'm telling you, I think you know that this movie made more money than it cost in its opening weekend.
I think it made $50,000.
Very close. Very close. It made $30,000, which is fantastic. Hey, for a film that cost $7,000 to make, opening weekend, that's four times the budget. I'm sure they did a little bit of marketing.
Oh, they would have spent a little bit of money. And in this instance, it would have been more than twice, I'd say.
Maybe they made their money back in opening weekend. How about that? Okay, gross worldwide then. How much does the little pony run? Doth she hit an iceberg and sink? Or does she make it all the way to New York City?
I mean, it's still not... It's going to get good... It's going to get praise and stuff. It's not running away with it. Hmm. It's still a niche thing. So it gets 30,000, and so it'd be great if it gets up to 100,000
gross worldwide, of course.
Yeah, no, I know. I can't see it.
It was internationally screened.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but I mean, it's still this tiny little flick, and it's quite dense.
Sometimes it's the smallest people that make the biggest differences in the world, as Kate Blanchett said.
I mean, I don't think it's going to make a million. Is it making a million?
Oh, I'd never said that. I mean, that's absolutely insane, obviously. But
right. So I think, okay, so it makes $250,000 then.
It makes $550,000.
Wow.
Very
amazing.
Good.
Great stuff.
For a $7,000 movie, I mean... That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, and that opens up the door. I mean, Carruth really struggled to make a film after that. It was years later that he finally made Upstream Colour, which I also rewatched for this episode, which I really loved at the time. It really blew my socks off, and I found not to be quite so strong on the, like, very impressive filmmaking, but quite silly. I read one of his, Steven Soderbergh was a big proponent of Carruth. He was really trying to help him out. There's a famous, I say famous, in the screenwriting world, a Carruth screenplay called A Topiary.
Right.
Which is a very dense screenplay that he wanted to get made. I tracked that down. I read that and thought, oh yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, he really went off the rails, did old Carruth. It's quite dark, sad story. And he's stopped filmmaking.
Yep.
So, should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot to pick our next episode?
I think we should.
Topic.
Yeah.
I got you on Primer.
Yeah, you did.
You, after you hammering me with three-hour movies and the Discord viewers hammering me with three-hour movies, I gifted you a 70-minute, sci-fi Marvel.
Right, yeah.
Just bear that in mind.
Sure. You want me to bear that in mind?
Bear that, imagine that. Bear that, imagine that. Bear that, imagine that. Bear that, and you do ba do, and that a boo ba do. You do boo ba ba da da no. Choose life, Mr. Anderson.
You chose life, Mr. Anderson, for ooh. I was born in life. And you've never known, Mr. Anderson, how much life to choose from, yes? See? I've always wondered what Spanish Bane would sound like. Oh, Señor Anderson. Choose a pide, España.
And das is good, Mr. Anderson. German Bane. Das is good.
Das is good, Mr. Anderson.
Das ist good, ja.
Sehr gut, Mr. Anderson. Liefde haben. Entschuldigung, Mr. Anderson, yes.
Why shoot a man if you're going to throw him out of a plane? Das ist gut, ja.
Right, I've got some films here for you. Are you ready for them?
Yes, I'm ready.
I've added four new films to try to get... No, just three. And then I've got a couple on here already, right? I must have tried to get you on this one before. I really want to do this one, but I think you haven't seen it. Let's find out, okay?
If only the format of the show was different.
I know, if only.
If only we ceded to the masses.
If
like
only.
I want.
Right, this is 2004, Nicolas Cage. It's National Treasure.
I mean, I've seen it. I don't... I just don't think it counts.
Why? Because, no, you can't just say that. You're always saying that about films that you think are shit films. People liked National Treasure. It was a big movie. They made, like, two more of them. I mean, it's definitely not significantly worse than some of the shit that you've made me watch on here.
Ooh! Let's pop a pin in that. Okay.
Hold on. Let's go back through some of the films that you've made me watch on here.
Hold on.
Don't... How about this? 1998's The Mask of Zorro.
Mate, I thought you were going to say The Mask.
No, not The Mask. You rewatched that recently, I think, didn't you? The Mask.
I had to stop, actually, because it looked so cheap and I thought, God, this is dated.
Well, speaking of looking cheap, The Mask of Zorro, Antonio Banderas, Anthony Hopkins and Catherine Zeta-Jones, I'd say having two of the three stars being sort of Welsh or Welsh adjacent. Not a terrible thing.
It's a great choice. I don't want to rewatch that. So we'll stick with National Treasure.
Okay, fine.
And you've obviously got some good things in your pocket.
Uh-huh.
Keep them in your pants. Keep them in your pocket.
Keep The Mask of Zorro in my pants.
National Treasure. That's embarrassing.